Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Lowe, host of NBC's coverage of the Premier League. Welcome along to the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast, where you can get the latest can't-miss content from NBC's coverage of one of the best leagues in the world. Plus, be sure to tune in on weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern for Premier League mornings on NBCSN. But for now, we hope you enjoy the latest edition of the Premier League on NBC podcast. We're going to start by talking about Granit Xhaka and Arsenal after what was quite some story last weekend. He got substituted against Palace in the 61st minute, threw down his captain's armband as he strolled off the field. There's a close-up here of him throwing his captain's armband, and he was booed by his own fans for many things, one of them not running off the field as Arsenal chased a winner. And this is what he gave back to the fans, including, as we're blurring out here, some swear words as well. Clearly not happy. The relationship between him and the Arsenal fans has not been good for some time. So off he went. He wasn't interested either in the words from his manager, Unai Emery, who, of course, was asked about this situation on Tuesday in his press conference. Let's hear from him.
He is now devastated. Devastated, sad. We spoke yesterday. Sunday night also spoke with Dan. Monday yesterday. And today morning, he tried it normal with the group. But he is devastated. He's sad about that situation. And really, he knows he was wrong. He was wrong. And he feels inside very deep. But it's normal, like a human. You need, every player need the support. Support them. Support the team.
Do you think he should have apologized for what he's done?
Yes, I think when we make individually some mistakes, and when we need to make apologies for one circumstance, I prefer to do, and we suggest him to do.
Well, that was Emery talking on Tuesday. 2 days later, Thursday, on his personal Instagram account, Granit Xhaka issued this statement. After taking some time to reflect on what happened Sunday afternoon, I'd like to give you an explanation rather than just a quick response. The scenes that took place around my substitution have moved me deeply. I love this club and always give 100% on and off the pitch. My feeling of not being understood by fans and repeated abusive comments at matches and in social media over the last weeks and months have hurt me deeply. People have said things like, we'll break your legs, kill your wife, and wish that your daughter gets cancer. He goes on, that has stirred me up, and I reached boiling point when I felt the rejection in the stadium on Sunday. In this situation, I let myself be carried away and reacted in a way that disrespected the group of fans that support our club, our team, and myself with positive energy. That has not been my intention, and I'm sorry if that's what people thought. My wish is that we get back to a place of mutual respect, remembering why we fell in love with this game in the first place. Let's move forward positively together. Well, Granit Xhaka has trained this week, but Unai Emery said yesterday that he would not be playing today in the game on CNBC against Wolves that kicks off at 11 o'clock. So, Robbie Earle, I'll start with you. Which side of this do you fall down on? Granit Xhaka's side, when his response to the fans who have spent a long time abusing him, as he explained there on social media and in the stadium, and that he's a human and he's allowed to react like that? Mm-hmm. Or on a lot of other people's sides, that there's no way you can do anything like that to your paying public, to your paying fans. Where do you stand?
Well, it's an interesting one, Rebecca. I first start with the fans. Under no circumstances is that vitriol, is that level of criticism should be aimed at a footballer. And when they bring in your wife and your children, that's going too far. Social media has its own problems. What I would say about that for Granit Xhaka is, come off social media. If that's the problem, concentrate on your family, concentrate on your football. But from Granit Xhaka's point of view, Rebecca, you're a professional footballer. You're a captain of a Premier League football club. There's only 20 in the world. You're the captain of Arsenal. That's an honour, by the way, to be captain of Arsenal. You cannot react in the way he did. Whatever has been said, however it's been thrown at you, I don't believe he can react in that way and throw down the armband and walk off. For me, that's him done. One and done for me. You should never have the captaincy back again.
OK, well, expand on that in a second. You said there's only 20 Premier League captains in the world. They are still human beings.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for such a long time. He called it the boiling point. And that was simply, was it not, just a human being reacting to arguably what many would say is a long amount of time of bullying.
Yeah. Sadly, that's the way it is, Rebecca. From when we used to go and watch playing football to experiencing that same booing. Social media, I totally agree with Robbie Earle. Private account, do whatever you got to do. Separate that off. He got booed a lot. He's been got booed a lot. A lot of players get booed, Rebecca. And I waited. My initial reaction was one of, wow, you can't do that. And then you wait for the reaction from the manager. We've just seen that. We wait for the statement from the player. We've just seen that. There was no real apology in there from Granit Xhaka, by the way, of his actions, Rebecca. It was an apology to the fans and what they thought.
Because he doesn't feel he's done wrong, Rob, does he?
No, he's explaining his behaviour there. I just... And basically, I haven't changed. My first reaction was, you can't do that. And I feel exactly the same way now.
So you take the captaincy off him like Robbie Earle would do?
You know what's funny? I think it's unacceptable what he's done. But if you're Unai Emery, Robbie Earle, what do you do? And I'll tell you what I think he has to do. I think he has to back him. I think if he feels there's a future, if he feels that this player is important for his team going forward, I think it's the right thing to do to bring out this game. I think he's got to say, you know what? We know it was wrong. I need this guy. I'm going to back him. Give him another chance to get back out there. If you don't, Rob, I think it just kills him off then.
Well,
kills him off.
He can come back as a player. But when you throw that armband, Rebecca, young players, they've got Maitland-Niles, they've got Xhaka, they've got Willock. What message does that say? They've had captains like Tony Adams and Patrick Vieira, greats of the game who've never thrown it down. What does that send? The message, a captain of a football club leads the club, sets the agenda, and sets the standard.
So you take the captaincy off him, what's that going to do to him? And when he goes out there, the fans, it's a permanent punishment that I don't think he can recover from. If you're okay with that,
I'm okay.
You're going to lose him.
Well, I'm not saying I'm going to lose him. I'm not sure if he's in Arsenal's best 11 anyway. So let's have, that's one argument to be decided. But at the end of the day, Rob, if you allow that to go, Unai Emery is not leading and managing his football club in the right way. And by the way, he's a third party when you said which side does it fall on. Unai Emery has had a captain by ballot. Should we choose? The manager hasn't chosen him. He's allowed the players to take control of that situation. I cannot be right at a big club like Arsenal.
Let's stay on Emery, because Robbie Musto, I don't think I've come across an Arsenal fan who thinks Granit Xhaka should be in the starting lineup, as you mentioned. He has been one of the first names on an Unai Emery team sheet since Emery arrived.
Yes.
Is that not part of the problem, that he's putting a player in a position that he's not good enough to play in?
Yeah, but that doesn't excuse his actions, Rebecca.
No, but is it not part of the... Because it's leading to the abuse because the fans don't like him. The fans say he's not good enough, so he's getting booed.
So what, you've got to listen to the fans and not play him?
But is he not culpable for his decision making over Granit Xhaka
in terms of his reaction, just playing him? Isn't this a different conversation about whether we should be playing him, should we make his captain? We talk about the reaction from this player, and that's what I absolutely detest.
So does Emery not have any part to play in this?
Not in that incident. No, not on Tuesday, the manager said,
Rob, he has to apologise. We're still 7 days. We're still waiting for the apology.
Yeah, I didn't like the statement from Granit Xhaka. I'm just saying, if you don't want to lose him forever at your club, I think he will say, you know what, he's got to bring him back in, Rebecca. Where's that leave him? If it's a public punishment, you're not captain anymore. The fans, by the way, are so wrongly so powerful in these situations. They can dictate whether a player stays or goes because of the way that they treat him. And I don't know whether there's a way back. If you take the captaincy away from him, there's definitely no way back.
Well, at halftime, both Robbies felt that we would see some sort of reaction from Manchester United in the second half. Did you see enough? No.
Not really, Rebecca, and I'm afraid this is part of the learning curve of this Manchester United. We're not going to see a United team that goes 5, 6, 7 games, winning games and unbeaten. It'll be 2 or 3, and then they'll lose a few, and the inconsistency that Robbie Musto talked about is going to be there because of the youth players who are learning and the quality, some players not being good enough.
And the inconsistency, can they learn? Can they get better through the inconsistency? What can they learn while they're going through these ups and downs?
It's difficult. It's like they look like a little bit of personality to drive them through games where it's not... I mean, the conditions were not great there, but who cares? You've got to find a way through that. I think you're right. I wrote down myself. Personality and quality. It's still at times there where Bournemouth allowed them to attack. There's still not quite that quality to confine the ball in behind for Rashford or Martial. Just a little bit with Fred and McTominay. They do an OK job, but OK players aren't going to win... go on a big run. This is United now. This is it. Yeah. I thought that it was really important they maintained a little bit of momentum. You said about it slightly turned in a corner. They needed to keep it going. They haven't. And this, for me, is now, this is what you're going to get. Some good, some bad.
Do you get more personality when you get more quality? So if they buy better players in January, they're going to get more personality from the quality.
And what might happen on days like today for Manchester United, and let's give Bournemouth credit as well because they played well. What happens on days like today, Rebecca, is... somebody comes up with something. It's not a great game. You know it's not great football, but somebody comes up with a little bit of magic, a combination play, bends one in, and that's enough to win you the game. They're lacking that at the moment.
Bournemouth came into the game against Manchester United a little goal shy today, and it was only the one goal that was needed to take down Manchester United, courtesy of Josh King just before the break. We're going to hear from that man, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but first, here is Bournemouth boss Eddie Howe.
Eddie, before the match, you asked for patience. You believed in your strikers. It was all repaid, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I thought it was a really good game today. I thought from our perspective, we were solid, competitive in the game. I thought our attacking play was really good. Around the box, we looked a real threat, looked like we could score. And we respect our opponents. We know how tough the game was going to be, and thankfully we got over the line. And, kept another clean sheet, which is great.
Was it a bad goal to give away from your respect? I mean, Joshua's finish was good, but there's a lot of time, a lot of ball in the penalty area.
Every time you concede a goal, it's a bad goal to give away. But just to build up to it, first into Callum Wilson, he can turn, lay it out, then into Josh. We don't screen him, so of course you're disappointed. But then again, it's a bit of magic that wins the game. You've got to say that about Josh's goal.
You pushed towards the end, you threw on the teenagers. What was missing in the performance that you were looking for there? Just more urgency, more tempo?
Yeah, well, some quality at times. Of course, as I said, the goal is important. We put some energy on after a while. Maybe I should have started a couple of others, who knows. Wednesday night, Saturday, early kickoff sometimes... that might have an effect, but I felt we started the game well, so I don't think that was the case.
Does it feel like three steps forward, one step back today?
Yeah, it's one of them that if you want to be challenging for top four and moving up the table, you need to win games like this. Then again, I'm sure Bournemouth will say that they want a challenge as well, so I hope they want to win home games. So for us, we disappointed. Then we got a game on Thursday, Partizan. Need to look forward to that. We can make sure we go through. And then we got Brighton before international break.
It is a busy week for Manchester United. Just want to touch on Bournemouth, Robbie Musto. They are up to sixth now in the Premier League, 3 points above Manchester United. Are they a much better team than them?
Than who, sorry?
The Manchester United. They're two places above them, three points above them.
I'm not sure they're a much better team, but they are an improving team. And that's what I like about Eddie Howe's team. He's already talked about, hinted in his press conference, that he'd been working on the defensive side of it. The last four games have conceded one goal in the Premier League, and they've played Arsenal, Manchester United. They've got enough attacking players in their squad to score goals. I know they haven't scored many of late, but they just have. Like wide players, some guys are injured right now, David Brooks I'm thinking of, and others. The fact that he's kind of got them organised defensively, they look stronger, Rob, and we talked about it in the second half. Yeah. Well, here you go. Here's the two forwards coming back in, making themselves nice and compact, not easy to play through for United.
Go first, Robbie.
No, I'll just say what they are, Rebecca, are... closer to what they're trying to do. You can see what they're trying to do and win a game. You don't necessarily always see that at Manchester United. That's the inconsistency.
You talked a half-time or at the end of the game about how Bournemouth are never in relegation scraps. They're kind of mid-table. Yeah. Is it about time that they try and win some silverware this season to go for the FA Cup?
A cup's always is going to be important, but there's a consistency about Bournemouth when you see them that's refreshing, Rebecca. They're not a yo-yo team. They're not fighting at the bottom of the league. Yes, a League Cup or an FA Cup would be great, but I'm calling him Steady Eddie for what you see of Eddie Howe. You know how his team is set up. He's got two strikers who can cause you problems, and they play good football.
goodness me. The Liverpool fans and Man City fans chewing their fingernails throughout that action today. Robbie Musto, your first reaction to the title contenders
just
days.
Just another boring day in the Premier League. I mean, you just never know what you're going to get. Southampton, we saw 9-0 Leicester last weekend. Awful, atrocious defending, yet they score. They defend, you know, heroically for so long. But the champions, Robbie, and there's two champions teams playing in this league this year, City, Liverpool, and they showed why they're champions, and they keep going, and they've got the quality to keep going. And when they needed it, the certain players stepped up and produced wins from places where we thought, wow, the top two could lose games today.
You get teams in this league who don't know how to win. There's a habit of losing games. Liverpool don't know how to lose. I just remember League Cup midweek, by the way, when there was down three times, come back against Arsenal and win that. And now I'm saying there's a habit, there's a feel, there's a mentality about this football club that's saying we're going to win matches, and that was a game that champions win.
It's like
back.
A gear. It's like another gear. They don't want to go to it, but they can go to it to get them through difficult moments like today.
And don't forget, Liverpool take on Manchester City next Sunday. Robbie Musto, I'll start with you. 9 goals against Southampton. They're looking to go third again today. A young squad, a young manager. It feels like the perfect storm that Brendan Rodgers has created. So how has he done it? What exactly has Brendan Rodgers brought to this football club?
Well, he certainly completed the transition of a Leicester City side that was known for being direct to being a footballing side. Claude Puel, to be fair to him, started that progression last season and he's finishing it off. And what he's added zip, intensity, and penetration, production from his key players. Through his personality and his tactical smarts, he is getting the best out of key players in the side. And when you look at Jamie Vardy, who was miserable last year, he is getting a nice blend and balance between playing intricate football through midfield and sometimes going long and direct to Jamie Vardy. So it keeps him happy, keeps all the parts happy to it. I mean, it's a very similar team to last season, but they're so much better now. It's because of Brendan Rodgers. Production, though, is the key thing. The key difference is penetration and production. James Maddison, 3 goals. Tielemans, 3 goals from a central midfield area. Perez, 3 goals. And Jamie Vardy, now the joint top scorer in the Premier League. And 2 fullbacks have both scored and assisted so far this season. So that, in a nutshell, is how he's done it. Tactical smarts, production from key players, and more of an intensity and a zip to their football.
Robbie, am I right in saying that he is the special manager that he is, that he's done all those things with Leicester because he has that combination of the tactical smarts, that tactical nous, but also the man management, and it's that chemistry, that combination?
Absolutely. With the modern-day football, Rebecca, that's crucial. It's critical to getting results and getting the productivity that Robbie Musto talked about. Whether it's Jamie Vardy or Kasper Schmeichel at one end to the Maddisons, the Tielemans and the Bournes at the other, every player is playing on top of the game. And this has been done, by the way, in 20 Premier League games. You look at Unai Emery at Arsenal, you look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer at Manchester United. They haven't put their imprint, their DNA, into their football clubs as quickly as Brendan Rodgers has. And the best analogy I can give as a player is, think about school when you've got your favourite teacher who makes the subject enjoyable. You learn, you can't wait. These Leicester City players can't wait to go into Mr. Rodgers' class every day because they're learning and they're getting better. And when that feeling comes, it's something you want to get more and more.
Yeah, we've all had those teachers. We've all wanted to impress them, absolutely. Do you think, Robbie Musto, they're in the title race?
I think where they are right now, you've got to include them in the title race as you'd include Chelsea Football Club. The top four right now are in it. Now, of course, we've been here before with Chelsea, with Leicester, and it would be remarkable to remain close towards the end. But, of course, they've done it before. And momentum and this club and a bright manager with young players, who knows?
What do you think?
5,000-1 last time, and we laughed. About 60-1 now odds for them to get there. I'm taking $10 of Mr. Musto's money and I'm putting it on Mr. Rodgers' class.
Did you get a sense, Jürgen, that if you got the equaliser that you would go on and win the game?
No, but if it's enough time, I would know it will try. So, of course, how can I know that? In the moment when we got the equaliser, I thought, okay, that's the minimum what we deserve today, so that's good. Yes, a couple of things I didn't like too much in the first half, what I spoke about, but that is usually not enough to lose a game with all the things, with all the passion we showed in all the other minutes, and especially in the second half. So, no, I had no clue that we will call the winner, but I still take it.
One final question. I think I know what you may say, but you're 28 games unbeaten in the Premier League, unbeaten this season. Arsenal did go through a season unbeaten. Is it possible in this day and age to even contemplate achieving that again? Because you look like a side that never knows when they are beaten.
Yes, it's not possible if we play like in the first. So I would say until we conceded a goal. So it, not that it was bad. It was actually the opposite. It was we played good football, but it was not the football, not the winning mentality what you need. And so we are here. There's no reason for playing this pass there. We have to make the right things in the right moment. So I have no idea. Probably it's probably not possible, but it's not that we think about, to be honest. We have enough to do with thinking about how could we win the next, can we win the next game, and it's all what we are concerned about.
I'm sure the players knew on the pitch with what was happening in the stadium. Everybody seemed to be tuned to what was happening with the Aston Villa-Liverpool game as well. How aware were you with what was happening elsewhere? And I'm sure you've seen what happened at the end in that game.
No, it's not our business. So we arrived in the locker room, it was 1-1, and after 1-2. So what happened many times, and Liverpool has done in the last years, is because it's a special talent. Sometimes it's diving, sometimes it's this talent to score incredible goals in the last minute. It's a talent. So when it's one time, two times, so we were lucky. What happened in the last two seasons, many, many times, they have a special character to do that. So nothing. So important is look ourselves, so we know which team we face. So in I don't know how many games they, I think, won 10 and draw 1. So big compliment, and next week we're going to Anfield to try to play the game.
So Pep Guardiola said it's none of his business what happened to Liverpool, except he clearly saw or got told that Mane was booked for diving, Robbie. What did you make of the fact that he said that in a post-match interview yesterday?
It tells me that, A, their focus is very much on Liverpool, not necessarily on his own team. But Pep, Rebecca, is having one of those days where I think he's trying to put pressure on the referee for next week when the two teams meet, if Liverpool, any player goes down in the box. It tells me that Pep is under pressure and feels, I think, for the first time, that this Liverpool team are not going away.
It was so interesting watching Pep on the sidelines yesterday because when they scored, he gets excited, but my goodness was he excited when he scored. And also, he got very frustrated at times about time wasting.
Yeah,
really over the top.
Yeah, from the other team. I mean, look at this. I mean, this is as animated, I think, I've ever seen him. And I followed his career right from the very beginning. I mean, look at him. I mean, he often does this, but not with this intensity. It continues going on and again. And with that interview, you know, is it getting to him a little bit?
Well, there was that moment when Aguero came off and he went screaming at Aguero.
Passive aggressive.
That up and down emotional state of a manager has that some sort of impact on his
players. You just see the two interviews. Jurgen Klopp seems to have a calm about him as though he's comfortable where he is. Pep seems a bit agitated, as you say. I don't know, is this a sign that Pep feels they're losing a little bit of control?
He feels desperate. I mean, maybe that's a too strong a word, but like to think about Liverpool, to talk about it, it's right after their game to talk about the player that scored the winning goal. You're right, absolutely right. He's trying to influence the referees for next weekend that this guy goes to ground easily and everybody get ready for it. But that's not Pep's style. No. That's not what we've seen before.
No. He's won titles without doing a little bit of desperation.
Needs that. He's behind Liverpool right now. And it looks like he knows that they're behind them a little bit in terms of the way they're playing.
Does that affect what you think will happen in next week's game between the pair at Anfield, just the way that we saw Pep behave yesterday? Does it, you think it's it less
possible? Maybe not in his behaviour. I've got to tell you, if I'm Sadio Mane and if I'm them Liverpool players, and they will have seen that, Rebecca, they're more determined now to go and win that game and put a 9-point gap between them and Manchester City. I think he's done his team and himself a disservice, Pep. He's almost shown us what goes on inside. We've never really seen too much about Pep. What we know is he's feeling it just like everybody else. He isn't this cool, super cheap guy on the side. The nerves are going as well.
And maybe a little worried about next weekend. A little worried, Rebecca, about what the result might mean and how his team is defending and how they can't keep a clean sheet and how Liverpool forwards can do special things. Klopp was interested as well, I thought, just going back to his interview, where he said, I didn't like the first 20 minutes. Good football, but not winning football. He wants penetration, he wants seriousness, he wants a ruthless streak to the way that they play. And when he doesn't see that from his team, he's quick to jump on it. It sets it up for a brilliant, brilliant weekend with those two playing next weekend.
Time now for our regular Sunday segment, The Boot Room. And today we're talking about fixture congestion and the very crowded football calendar. And this really came about, it's often talked about, but Jurgen Klopp, with the situation that Liverpool find themselves in coming up this Christmas, I'm going to show you Liverpool's December fixture list. It's a busy one. Everton, massive game, of course, Merseyside derby. Then it's away to Bournemouth. Salzburg in the Champions League, Watford. Then Villa away right now is a TBD in terms of the date, because that is when they think Liverpool have to be in Qatar for the FIFA World Cup, even. They've got two games in Qatar. Then it's West Ham, Leicester and Wolves to finish off the month of December. Now, the problem with the Villa game, but the reason why there is no date for it, is because it's supposed to be when they're in Qatar. And Jurgen Klopp, gentlemen, said this week that if they cannot find a date for that game, for that quarter final of the League Cup, Robbie Earle, against Aston Villa, then Klopp said, we will forfeit the game. We will come out of the League Cup and allow Aston Villa a bye through to the semi-finals. How surprised are you that he said such a thing?
Very surprised. In some respects, Liverpool are being penalised for success. They're a successful team. That's why they're in this situation. But it'd be damaging for Liverpool Football Club, Rebecca. For everything they stand for and the traditions of that football club, to pull out of a competition in the quarter-final stage, I think would be a huge PR kind of a mistake and be damaging to the football club.
And damaging to the competition as well. What do you think?
Well, I think it's another example of his frustrations. There's some things that frustrates him with English football, and that the fixture, the amount of fixtures, is something that he feels very strong about. But what we're seeing, Rebecca, is that managers in the Premier League, they can't really moan about it, because there's too many people that will say, get on with it. You know, they all get paid a lot of money. You know, that's the way modern day football is. And it's seen as moaning or making excuses for poor results. But there's many of them, I guarantee, many of the managers in the Premier League feel the same way, that this is an English football with two cup competitions, etc., etc.
Liverpool aren't poor results, are they? Liverpool are winning it. They haven't lost.
But it's been times before where you know he wants to have a go at stuff, and he sort of says, "No, I'm not going to make an excuse." But so it's a little disappointing. He's saying that they'll pull out of the competition. That would be incredibly damaging for the League Cup, which is pretty damaged right now, by the way, when you see a lot of the lineups from the Premier League sides. But you see a list of games like that. I mean, that's so difficult to try and get your best players out there for the majority of the times. The fans want to see the best players and to perform at a high level. Very, very difficult.
Frank Lampard last week talked about Christian Pulisic and the fact that he had just the 1 week break last summer. And players like Harry Kane play virtually all year round. Maybe they get 2 weeks off in June or July. Are we taking enough care of our top level players?
I don't think so. I think it's a subject that's been the same for a long period of time. I did when I played, and I do now, the two games in 3 days over the Christmas period, where you've got to play one game, a day of rest, and then you've got to play again, along with the amount of games players have to play. I never played for England, Rebecca, so I enjoyed a 4 or 5 week period where I did nothing. That's what I felt I needed.
In the summer,
to clear my body. I was a guy that done a lot of work. I ran a lot. I felt I needed that time, 4 or 5 weeks, to do nothing. And then I gradually built up my pre-season work, ready to go back into training to feel good. I had the luxury, Rebecca, of 4 or 5 weeks of nothing. Forget about it these days. Players don't have that luxury. And I just wonder if, over the course of the season, that comes back to her.
I think also it's important to try and explain, Rebecca, what playing two or three days in the Premier League is like. When you play a Premier League game, it's like, probably in some respects, like running a marathon. Your legs are dead, you're bruised, you've got aches, you've got knocks. Sometimes that takes 2 or 3 days before you feel like you've recovered. Like, okay, I'm ready, I'm okay again. And then you train and get ready for another game. When you have these games coming in 2 or 3 days, you're basically, I used to think when these games were coming, were not how well I'm going to play, just last the game. I couldn't concentrate on being my best. So then the quality of the game drops, because everybody's on a similar vein.
If you're one of the top Premier League players and you're playing, like you say, for 10 years at that level with this amount of games and Champions League and international...
Shortens your career,
I was just going to ask you that
Absolutely
question.
Shortens your career, and also makes you more susceptible to the injuries. To ACLs, we've seen a lot of Achilles and hamstrings. These are the things that load the fatigue of training and playing with this intensity. And let's just say nothing. The intensity when me and Musty were playing is here. The intensity now is here. The speed and power has gone up another level. We stand next to these Monday footballers and they're a different shape than we were.
Perhaps at some point, whether it's now or in the next year or two, something has to give. We've already had the introduction of some sort of winter break. It's a sort of winter break in the way they're splitting a round of fixtures in January. What could the solution be? You have said, Robbie, on many an occasion in private, just with us, and I'm going to tell the viewers, I think it's fascinating, that there is an argument that the Premier League should be reduced to 18 clubs in a bid to give them more quality time off. Do you feel that that could be a realistic option, or is that just sort of dream world for you?
I think it's probably incredibly unpopular with lots of people maybe watching this and the Premier League, of course. I think it makes a ton of sense. We see that in the Bundesliga, it's four fewer games. If you want to keep having two cup competitions, which is what we should talk about as well, by the way, then that would be a way that you could do that. It just gives you wiggle room. Wiggle room of less fixtures.
See, I'm not for that, Bex.
What would you rather?
I'd rather lose...
solve this problem.
I'd rather lose the League Cup. The League Cup...
completely?
Is,
get rid of it?
No. Well, no. I'd play under 23 players and maybe a couple of overage. So you get a mix. So you get more young players coming in, as Chelsea have done this year when they're in a position.
What do you mean?
So I'm saying maybe...
Well, so the Premier League teams are still in it.
So it's Olympics where you can play under 23...
Well, just take it. How about just taking the Premier League sides out of it? And the League Cups for the League...
No,
the league,
not
the
really.
Football
I
League
think,
teams.
I think it's a great way of getting young
So that's no
talent.
Changing. Because they do that right now. The Premier League sides put young players in the League Cup.
And
so that's not going to change anything.
Well, players are getting rested then. Players are getting rested.
The fans want to see.
Last week, Liverpool made 11 changes.
Yeah, which I don't know. I think that's awful. If I'm going to a game, I want to see the best team run.
Pretty good game, 5-5.
I know, but I want if I pay my money, I want to see the best team.
Well, exactly.
And with all the games...
Wasn't it 5-5 because the quality wasn't really there?
Well, quality was there or not. Depends how you look at it with the goals.
But don't you want to see the best... I want to see the best team. When we do our games, and sometimes there's rotations that we talk about, I want to see the best team. And with fewer Premier League games or fewer games, you're going to see that more often.
But you say get rid of or the Premier Leagues don't go in. The lower leagues, that affects the lower leagues.
No, it does.
There's no money. There's no attraction. You're not getting a big day at Manchester United.
All right,
you can still have a big day at Manchester United.
So what's the solution then? There's got to be a tough decision made, whether it's two fewer teams in the Premier League or the Premier League sides don't go in. I mean, on that list there was a League Cup game for Liverpool.
There's
so that
no
makes it harder to fit in the other
the
game,
problem,
which is the problem.
The League Club, the Premier League clubs would have to vote that they're going to get to lose. There is no way
they are voting to say two more of us drop out.
In the Bundesliga, the two Pep knows it and Jurgen knows it. In the Bundesliga, it's 18 games, so it's 18 teams, 34 games, and one German Cup competition.
Yeah.
And they have a 3 or 4 week winter break for those players to recharge. That feels and seems like a better scenario for protecting our players and the international guys that don't get a break in the summer.
This is a good conversation. We have to finish now.
They have to go back to Germany.
They may have to go back to Germany. No, we want them to stay in the Premier League.
Correct.
Quick correction of myself. The winter break in the UK in the Premier League will actually be in February next year for the first time. So Leicester City go above Chelsea into third spot. Chelsea in fourth. There's now a gap opening up between fourth and fifth of 6 points. This Leicester City team, what makes them so special?
Joint best defensive record in the league, 8 goals conceded. Third high scorers in the league, 27 goals. Tells you at both ends of the pitch they can do it. Today, they adhere to what their focus is. Get playing football and creating opportunities. Brilliant free set-piece work from Madison gets them the goal today. The signs at the end tell me that this group are enjoying working hard. And when you get that, it's something special.
Robbie Master, it's a tough question. Would you take the 2016 Leicester title-winning team or this team, which is better?
Title-winning team. They were grinders. You know, long way to go for this Leicester City team. Very different, but that Leicester team in 2016 was a brilliant team. Hard-working, outran, out-bullied, done a lot of things than a lot of other teams in that league. But this is a very different side, a very good side. I thought you were going to ask me about the central defenders. I'm not sure I'd take any other centre-backs right now in the Premier League than Johnny Evans and Xu Yunchu. Scored the goal, loves defending. Johnny Evans loves defending, strong, aerially. Those two, apart from the other players that will get more of the headlines, have been brilliant for Leicester.
Better on the eye, Rob, aren't they, than the winning
They're better
team.
On the eye.
But the other team have got a little bit of grit and determination.
Well, we're only just over a quarter of the way through this season, so plenty of time still for this developing Brendan Rodgers Leicester City team. That does it for this edition of the Premier League on NBC Podcast. Be sure to check out other episodes where you'll get a collection of our most spirited in-studio debates as well as exclusive on-site access. Plus, don't miss out on Premier League mornings on weekends at 7 a.m. Eastern on NBCSN. I'm Rebecca Lowe. Bye for now.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.